Welcome to What Matters in North Carolina. My name is Mark Shiver. So glad to have you listening to our program today. We have a nice, really nice show for you. I hope you're going to really enjoy this as much as I have enjoyed putting it together for you. We have Representative Larry Pittman as our guest first, and he will be talking about his bill, which would make constitutional carry the rule of the state when it comes to carrying a concealed weapon. Currently, you have to have a permit, and this bill, if passed, would say, you know what, we have a right under the Constitution to keep and bear arms, and so you will not need to have a concealed carry permit if you so desire here in North Carolina. Of course, that bill may find some hurdles along the way, but we're going to dive into that with Representative Pittman and find out his thoughts, why he thinks it's a good bill, what challenges he sees along the way as far as getting that bill passed, and whether or not he's getting support. So looking forward to talking with him about that. You gun enthusiasts out there, let your friends and family know that this is a hot topic, and be sure to listen to the podcast. Also, we'll be talking with Nick Oxner, investigative reporter from WBTV. Get caught up with him with what he's working on and what's going on in the North Carolina General Assembly. So without any further ado, let's talk with Representative Larry Pittman here on What Matters in North Carolina. It's a pleasure once again to welcome back to What Matters in North Carolina, Representative Larry Pittman. He represents the fine folks in Cabarrus County. And Representative Pittman, welcome back to What Matters in North Carolina.
Thanks, sir. Appreciate the opportunity to speak to you.
And you are representing District 82, Cabarrus County. How are things down there?
Busy. We're kind of jumping, bursting at the seams down there. Things seem to be going pretty well.
Now, that area around Concord and all, you're getting a lot of the, basically, the Charlotte stuff. Am I correct?
I'm sorry, you broke up there. I didn't catch all that.
Being down there in Concord, you're getting a lot of the Charlotte overflow and the things that affect that area certainly impact Concord.
Right. There is a lot of overflows, you know, a lot of folks who live in Concord, Harrisburg area and work in Charlotte. So we have a lot of traffic down there, too.
Absolutely. Now, I wanted to ask you before we get to the main topic of our conversation. The General Assembly has convened, and y'all have been at it now for 2-3 weeks. What's your take so far on how the session is going?
We're still breaking up some, but I think things are beginning to pick up. We got off to a slow start, but I think, you know, we've had some committee meetings now, and we have had a few bills voted on, but you know, I think things will get rolling here pretty soon.
I wanted to ask you, Representative Pittman, about a bill that you have filed, House Bill 69, and it's called the Constitutional Carry Act. And for gun owners and those who are enthusiastic about the Second Amendment, this is a real positive bill. Can you explain the Constitutional Carry Act for our listeners?
What the bill basically does is make the concealed carry permit optional. Keeps the system in place for those who want to use it for purposes of reciprocation with states where a permit is still required, and also to be able to purchase a handgun, as you can now with a concealed carry permit, to be able to go and buy a handgun without having to go to the sheriff to get a pistol purchase permit. So, you know, we'll keep the system in place for those who want to use it for that. But otherwise, you would not have to have a permit to carry as long as you can legally carry a gun. I mean, there are certain folks, you know, criminals and terrorists and stuff, mentally ill, that we don't want doing that. And this bill does not change any of that at all. So we're talking about people who can lawfully carry a gun anyway. And part of my thinking about putting this bill together is, you know, you can openly carry now without a permit or any kind of training. And I know some people concerned about the training aspect, and I think there are probably ways we can address that. I'm just not doing it in this bill. But if you can carry openly, you know, I don't see why the same person can't carry concealed without a permit. For instance, if I'm walking down the street, got my coat over my arm, and I'm carrying my gun, and it's open, everybody can see it's on my hip, That's fine in North Carolina to carry openly like that. But say it gets chilly and I put my coat on, suddenly the gun's covered up and all of a sudden I'm breaking the law if I don't have a permit. That makes absolutely no sense to me whatsoever. So we're trying to take away that impediment to concealed carry. You know, last year I ran a gun rights amendment, and it had a piece in there about amending the state constitution to take the prohibitive language against concealed carry out of the constitution. What I'm doing this year is I'm just running the part about being able to carry without a permit, and we may come back to the amendment idea later.
Representative Pittman, let me that is an interesting scenario that you just described. I could be walking down the street with a gun strapped on in the open, and I would not have had to have taken any kind of class to do that. Is that correct?
Right.
But the minute I put on a jacket, I've suddenly entered into a realm where I must have a permit, and I will have had to have gone through the classes to obtain that permit.
Right.
So under your proposed legislation, House Bill 69, I would not have to go through a permitting process if I did not want to. Is that correct?
That's right. You'd have the option, but you wouldn't have to do it.
Now, what are some of the, and I have to ask you this because I think people will be wondering, what are some of the concerns that you have heard since you have filed this bill about not having to go to a class?
Well, one person has suggested to me that maybe we ought to have training in the schools, which I think is a good idea. You know, the NRA has the Eddie Eagle program where they will go into the schools and talk about gun safety. And I think that's a good thing. And maybe in another bill we might look at trying to get some safety training concerning guns in the schools. It might be something we could pursue. But, you know, to say that a person has to have the government's permission to carry concealed, to me, violates the Second Amendment.
Well, there are certainly other states, as you know, Representative Pittman, that have constitutional carry. And there are a lot of states that have the requirement for having a concealed carry permit. Congressman Hudson here in North Carolina has proposed legislation that there be a national reciprocity. And I would suppose that you would be in favor of that.
I have mixed feelings about it. I understand what he's trying to do, and I think it would be good if all states would recognize each other's permits, you know, and you'd have reciprocity. But on the other hand, I look at that as a state's rights issue. I think each state should be able to make up their minds on that themselves. So I'm not adamantly opposed to Congressman Hudson's bill. I'm a little nervous about it from the standpoint of states being able to determine this for themselves.
Well, yeah, that is one of the concerns that have been brought up by those who are looking at that. So if a person is mentally ill, right now they're not supposed to be able to get a firearm. But do you have any concerns that if you do take the permitting process out of the equation, that this might open the door for those who are mentally ill to suddenly have greater ease at carrying guns?
Well, where that is affected is really in the background check system, and we probably need to strengthen the background check to catch those folks before they buy a gun, because this is about people who can legally carry a gun, not those who are prohibited. I'm not saying that folks who are prohibited from carrying a gun at all should be allowed to carry concealed. So the background check system is something I do think is reasonable to try to, you know, keep people who shouldn't have a gun from buying one. But if you qualify to buy a gun, I think it's none of the government's business how you carry it. And that's the point of my bill.
Yeah, absolutely. I understand that. Our guest, Representative Larry Pittman, representing the fine folks down in Cabarrus County, and we're talking about his House Bill 69, the Constitutional Carry Act. Why would you not, just for sake of argument, Representative Pittman, why would you not, in the sake of just being all out Second Amendment, do away with the concealed permitting process and just go straight constitutional carry across the board?
Well, it's kept as an option because there are states who do not allow it now. Of course, I don't know that we'll ever get all the states to allow concealed carry. You know, there are some states who don't have a permit process even. And even Congressman Hudson's bill would not make the states have an acceptance for concealed carry. It would just say you have to honor the permits of other states. So where states don't have concealed carry now, you know, you're kind of out of luck on that. And I'm rambling here. I'm forgetting the question. What was it again?
Well, why not
back on track?
Yeah, why not just say?
Oh yeah, so you know, you can have reciprocation with those states
that require a permit.
That do require a permit.
Okay.
And, you know, since you're not going to have all states even allowing concealed carry anytime soon, I don't think those that are still going to require a permit. You need to be able to get a permit if you want to be able to go into those states. Like, for instance, my daughter lives in Virginia, and we have reciprocation. But I can't carry concealed in Virginia without the permit because they require it currently. Now, that may change. But right now, you have to have the permit, and they would recognize my permit. So unless I want to leave my gun home when I go to see my daughter, I'm going to have that permit. So I personally intend to keep on having a permit myself. I'm just saying it shouldn't be required in our state.
Now, Representative Pittman, under your bill, I have looked at a great number of exceptions here towards the end of the bill language, and I haven't found it yet, but does this address the campus of the General Assembly? It may be in there, and if it is, I'm sorry I haven't found it. I know the governor's properties are excluded from having handguns. But last year or 2 years ago, you guys really debated heavily whether or not a member of the legislature should be allowed to have concealed carry. Does your bill address that?
No, it does not. All those restrictions and exceptions to the restrictions that you see in there is existing law.
Okay.
And we were just clarifying that those things remain in effect with this bill. Now, we may look at doing legislation in another bill to make some changes in that, but it's basically just clarifying that we left those things pretty much alone. There are maybe a couple of things, like I know one change that we're trying to make is concerning veterans. Current law says that you cannot carry concealed or get a permit if you have an other than honorable discharge. Well, that covers a lot of things, and some of it can be little stuff that's not worth you not being able to carry a gun concealed. And so we're changing that language to you can't do it if you got a dishonorable discharge.
Okay.
Because if you get a dishonorable discharge, that means you've really done something bad, and we wouldn't want you carrying a gun.
Yeah, absolutely. So I know that you have probably received an outpouring of support from some of the Second Amendment folks who are pretty vigorous about that. Who is opposing this vigorously to you? You're getting a lot of calls or emails saying, you know, what are you doing?
Well, so far I've had just basically citizens and like a few law enforcement people individually. I haven't had, I'm expecting I'll probably hear from the Sheriff's Association before it's over, but I haven't heard from them per se yet. I have heard from some individual members. And they're, you know, the main ones is just some individuals who are against it. Most of what I'm getting is support. I'm hearing from a lot more people who like the idea than those who don't.
Well, that's I think most people are in North Carolina pretty pro Second Amendment, and yet, you know, I remember a couple of years ago, as I'm sure you do, that people came out of the woodwork when you guys had the gun reform legislation that Representative Schaefer was running on the House floor, and you know, hours and hours of debate. My only concern, and I think you may have addressed this, but I'll ask it again for a little bit more of an in-depth. I think that the classes are a good thing. Now, I understand the Constitution, I understand the Second Amendment, but I'm not sure that I would trust me to just strap on right now and say, well, you know, the Second Amendment says I can. I would feel like I should have a little training. You know what I mean? And I would hope that others would too.
Right. That's certainly a good idea. I'm just saying, if you can, you know, whether it should be that way or not, if you can carry openly, legally, covering that gun up shouldn't make any difference. You're not going to be any more dangerous to the public because it's concealed than you are with it open. So,
well, that's a good point.
Getting some training and knowing gun safety and that sort of thing is a good thing. Since we don't require it for open carry, and I'm opening a can of worms there because somebody will say, well, then let's start requiring it for open carry, and like they did in Texas, and I just, you know, I'm not for that either. But how you carry the gun is not the point. It's what are your intentions. And if you don't intend to harm anybody, I don't think it's anybody's business how you carry the gun, openly or concealed. And the criminals and terrorists are not going to pay attention to those laws anyway, so they're basically worthless. They just are an impediment to honest citizens.
Yeah.
And so I think really some folks think that it's more of a deterrent if criminals and terrorists see your gun with open carry. I think that just makes you a target. They're going to shoot you first, you know.
Yeah.
I think if they're aware that they're in an area where they have no idea how many people are carrying concealed, that's more of a deterrent.
Well, yeah, I mean,
criminal activity.
Yeah, you bring up a great point because, you know, we look at Chicago, which has some of the strongest gun control measures in the country, if not the strongest, and, you know, they've got some of the highest, if not the highest, gun-related crime in the entire nation. And so that certainly doesn't seem to be working at all. And, you know, I think you're right. It's those that are of ill intent aren't going to care whether or not, you know, somebody's got a permit or not. But if they know that there are people that are carrying, they might be less inclined to do harm. So your thoughts, the process I see here online, it's got to go to judiciary and then finance. What are your thoughts?
Well, I'm not certain why it's going to finance other than the fact that it'll cut down on some income for the sheriff's offices. But, you know, I don't know why it would affect finance otherwise.
Yeah.
So I was a little surprised that it has that subsequent referral. Judiciary, like I say, the chairman of that committee, I think, will be reluctant to hear this bill. So, we'll just see how that goes. I hope he'll hear from enough people who want the bill heard that we can move forward with it, but we'll just have to see how that goes.
All right. Well, Representative Pittman, thank you very much for joining us here on the program, for explaining your bill, and for filing your bill. I am sure that a lot of our listeners, if they could, they would say thank you very much. And so we appreciate it, sir.
I appreciate it. And just one last thought is I really believe that the founders of this nation, you know, in North Carolina, was very much responsible for the Second Amendment being put into the Constitution, would be up in arms if they knew that today you were having to ask the government permission to carry a gun concealed. I don't think that was ever their intention.
I think you're probably very correct on that note, and that's a good spot to leave it right there. And we appreciate it, Representative Pittman. We'll follow this bill closely and look forward to it getting passed.
Thank you so much, and you take care.
Yes, sir, you too. I really enjoyed talking with Representative Pittman there. He's a great guy, and he's given a lot of thought, you can tell, to this constitutional carry bill, and we'll see what kind of obstacles he faces in getting it through the legislature. He has some concerns about whether or not it'll even get on the calendar in the Judiciary Committee, and so we'll, you know, that's how it works. If you chair a committee, you decide whether or not a bill gets heard in your committee. Now, obviously, I think the powers that be, namely the Speaker's office and the Rules Committee chairman and some of the higher-ups in the House, that sort of stuff kind of flows down. But if there's any objection in the leadership to this bill getting heard, then it won't get heard. But maybe it will. It'll be an interesting debate. I hope it does get heard, and then we go on to Finance Committee, and then it passes there, we go to the full House, and I guarantee you a lengthy debate. But we'll keep you abreast of the progress of that bill, and our thanks to Representative Larry Pittman for being on our show. Coming up now, going to talk with Nick Oxner, good friend of the program. We talk to him regularly, get his update on what's going on in the General Assembly and stuff that he's working on. He is one of the best investigative reporters in the entire state, works for WBTV in Charlotte. So let's talk to Nick Oxner right now on What Matters in North Carolina. It's always a pleasure to welcome back Nick Oxner. He is the excellent investigative reporter with WBTV, and he's our guest on What Matters in North Carolina. Nick, how's it going?
Hello. How are you?
Well, just another lazy day in late winter here at the General Assembly. Not much going on.
Wouldn't that be? You know, you're kind of right.
Yeah, in a weird sort of way. But
you're right. I mean, and maybe that's a good thing. It seems like the less they do, the better sometimes.
Well, I think we could send everybody home, and we probably wouldn't miss a beat. You know what I mean? But then we wouldn't have anything to talk about. So
that's right.
I guess Governor Cooper, kind of in a ironic situation, he has no plans to change or replace Governor McCrory's executive order on state bathrooms. But he has come out with his own proposal to repeal House Bill 2. And so the waters just keep getting muddier and muddier around this legislation.
Well, and more interesting, I think, Mark, is the fact that that was the second proposal from the Democrats to address HB 2 that they rolled out in under a week. So, you know, a week ago, last Thursday, Democrats unveiled legislation that they said would repeal HB 2. And then, you know, the next Tuesday, Democratic legislative leaders are standing next to Roy Cooper as he unveils his proposal. So I'm kind of I'm confused, and I'm unclear on, I assume everyone's going with the Cooper proposal now, but I'm not sure why they rolled out one and then rolled out a second.
Well, it's so folks like you and I can scratch our heads and wonder what's going on. is this ever going
to
go?
Observer, something to write about.
Yeah, exactly.
Twice, so.
Is this ever going to go away? I mean, do you think they're going to come to any kind of resolution here?
Yeah, and that's the question everyone wants to know, right?
Yeah.
I think that there is a sense in the General Assembly that if they could find a magic bullet that made everybody happy, they would put it in the nearest gun that you may have concealed or you may not, and depending on which member you're near. They would put that magic bullet in a gun, and they would shoot it so that we could all be done talking about this. I think that is definitely – everyone feels that way. I think the problem is that the two sides feel totally differently on what the fix is.
Yeah, and speaking of guns, I know you're probably not following this, but it's interesting – just spoke with Representative Larry Pittman. He's filed a bill that would make North Carolina a constitutional carry state. So getting a concealed carry permit would no longer be required. You know, there are a number of states that have this position where they say that the Second Amendment is all that you need, and you don't need to go to a class, you don't need to get a permit. And so it will be interesting. And my point in bringing this up is that there's always, Nick, some type of firearms legislation that we can count on during one of these sessions. And I can promise you that if this bill gets out of committee and makes it to the House floor, the debate will be at least 4 hours.
That's true. And, you know, I think the fact that there is room for someone like Representative Pittman to introduce a bill like constitutional carry, that's a thing that is not really going to impact the everyday lives of many North Carolinians, right? I'm not saying it's a good thing or a bad thing. I'm just saying it's not a pressing issue. It's not the budget. It's not health and safety. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think right now you're seeing a lot of members filing a lot of bills to the extent that they're filing bills that, you know, it's just kind of like, what do you think? You know, and it's kind of a reminder that it's the long session. So now's the time to write up whatever you want to do and see if you can get it through, you know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Another good example of that on an issue that's just totally ridiculous is making the Fayetteville Fried Chicken Festival the official state fried chicken festival.
Well, now, wait a minute. You have really stolen my thunder, because I was going to ask you about that. And you have confessed on Twitter to loving fried chicken and actually would support this legislation vigorously.
Well, who doesn't? I also grew up in Cumberland County, in Fayetteville.
Oh, well, you're down.
I love both fried chicken and Fayetteville, and therefore I wholeheartedly support this proposal.
Well, I think that if the legislature does anything, they should pass this, and we need an official fried chicken festival here in North Carolina. I'm not sure if there's any other fried chicken festivals across the state, but I don't get out much, but anyway.
I have to confess that I didn't know that there was a fried chicken festival in Fayetteville. Maybe it's after my time.
Well, you know, there are lots of different things that they can focus on, and, you know, the bill filing will be over soon, so they got to get everything in regardless of whether or not it's important or relevant or makes any sense.
Or just file a bunch of crap that you can replace later when you have a policy proposal you want to.
Well, I wasn't going to say that, but since you're the guest, I'll let you say that.
So, that's a statement that I'm happy to make because no one's going to argue with that.
Yeah, well, you do have a point. So I noticed also that there's some stuff going on with tolls. And well, tell me the latest in the Charlotte area on the whole toll lane thing. You said that the governor's shovel-ready infrastructure projects include widening Independence Boulevard and something to do with toll lanes. What's up with that?
Yeah, well, that's interesting. And so we did a big story, gosh, just 2 weeks ago maybe, less than that, about so Independence Boulevard, for your readership who has not ever had the just awful experience of having to drive on it, is Highway 74, and it's the main east-west connector basically between Charlotte and Union County. And if you want to, well, for instance, drive from Charlotte to Fayetteville, you're probably going to take Highway 74. If you want to go to the beach, you're going to hop on 74. You know, it'll get you to Union County, where a lot of people live in kind of a suburb of Charlotte, but it'll also get you all points east out of Charlotte. And that's pretty much the only, there's not another thoroughfare kind of getting out of Charlotte going east. And right now, Independence Boulevard is still heavily stoplights, and it's three or four lanes, and it is just terrible. I mean, I don't know anyone who enjoys ever driving on Independence. And so it's been under construction for a long time. There's currently a portion of it that's under construction. And then our story really looked at what's the future for Independence. And the future is another round of construction starting currently slated for 2022. And that would farther take steps to make Independence a true kind of freeway. You know, more like a hot, you know, and no stoplights, can't turn off of it. Once you get on, you're on it, and you take exits. And as part of that, they'll build some free lanes, but they'll also finish the infrastructure to have toll lanes on Independence Boulevard. And so that was one of that kind of final phase that's currently scheduled for 2022 is one of the projects that Governor Cooper submitted to the Trump administration as one of their shovel-ready, quote-unquote, I hate using that phrase, but that's what they called it, shovel-ready projects, you know, because the Trump administration wants to push an infrastructure package. So that was one, as well as adding toll lanes on I-485. Again, that's something that's already in the works, is already going to happen. There's a lane's worth of extra concrete just sitting there on I-485 right now, and that's the big loop that goes around Mecklenburg County. And the plan is there was a big debate like a year, year and a half ago about, well, can't we turn that extra concrete into a free lane for now and then convert it to a toll lane later? But they said, no, we'll just save it for a toll lane. And so that's another project that the Cooper administration listed as a shovel-ready project.
Well, in a couple of months, my tomatoes will be shovel-ready, but I guess I won't be getting any government funding for that. So you mentioned the Trump administration and infrastructure, and just a few minutes ago, I guess, well, not a few minutes ago, but earlier, the Senate has confirmed Representative Mulvaney from South Carolina, who he is going to be kind of riding herd over some of these infrastructure projects. And what's interesting is that the president has proposed, you know, like $1 trillion, and yet at the same time, he wants to cut taxes. And so he's jumping right into a rather tenuous situation as far as trying to balance all of that, those objectives.
Well, it's going to be interesting, right? Because he has picked as his budget director a man who doesn't like spending the government's money, which is not necessarily a bad thing, but I don't think Mick Mulvaney's ever seen an appropriation he supported. So, I'm exaggerating, obviously. But it's going to be interesting to see how his fiscal hawkishness is going to square with some of the less fiscally conservative, you know, planks of the Trump administration plan. Like, you know, an infrastructure project is not really all that conservative fiscally, you know.
Yeah.
And again, it's not saying it's good or bad, but I'm not sure how that's going to square with someone like Mick Mulvaney. So it will be interesting to see.
Senator Bill Cook wants it to be a crime to violate public meetings law. Is that seems to be a little extreme. Your thoughts?
Yeah. I appreciate the sentiment. I think I would take a different approach. And for the record, it is already illegal. It's a misdemeanor to destroy, for government officials to destroy some state records already.
Right.
If you violate kind of the retention schedule from the Department of Cultural Resources. So in some extent, it's already a crime. But look, here's the problem. And that also applies, Mark, to public records as well, not just open meetings.
Uh-huh.
But the problem, the way North Carolina's system for getting public records works, is every time a government doesn't do what it's supposed to by the law, governments always do what they're supposed to, right? No. But every time a government doesn't provide a public record, your only option is to go to court to compel them to produce the record. In fact, right before I talked to you, I was in court in a public record suit that we're involved in. And anytime you get a lawyer involved, it's going to be really expensive and it's going to take forever. And we have to start, I would encourage our General Assembly to start looking at solutions. If you really want a public record produced, let's start looking at solutions that help mediate that process and help compel the production of records outside of a courtroom, because that's what we have right now, and it's costly and it's expensive. It's costly and it's time-consuming. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, I was with someone this morning that was telling me they had requested some records from Governor Cooper's office, and he hasn't been in office that long, but they have yet to have any kind of response whatsoever. And so I think that there is a there's a problem, because folks in the media like us can request public records and basically just get ignored, you know. And
so and normal citizens can do the same thing. And
yeah.
I don't want, you know, it's easy for, you're reporters. It is. Public records are a thing that are available to every resident in the state of North Carolina.
Yeah. No, you're right. So
it should be used. And it's actually interesting. So the Department of Transportation has all of their records requests and a summary of their records requests published online, like who's request, like who has a request, what day they requested it. And there are far more requests to the Department of Transportation from law firms for information than there are from media outlets.
Right.
A factor of many. I don't remember off the top of my head, but I remember looking at it last week by a factor of many. So, you know, the McCrory administration became the subject of like a dozen public records lawsuits, something like a dozen. And in their first one, they said, well, this is just the mainstream media trying to bog down government. And that's just, and they got admonished by a judge. But that's just, I take exception to that. It's just the wrong tack to take, because, one, a public records request is neither Republican nor Democrat. And, you know, and whatever the reason, in the state, under the law, you cannot ask a requester the reason for making the request. So these are records that belong to everybody, and if we believe in good and transparent open government, all sides should be, you know, encouraged, should be encouraging government to make the records available.
Yeah, well, you know, one thing, I don't disagree with that, but one thing I see with Senator Cook, and I guess Senator Sanderson also is on this bill, is that, you know, some meetings like town councils, school boards, et cetera, can go into, you know, closed session for various reasons. And some of the people, you know, if this word of this gets out, you know, I can just imagine now, because I used to serve on a board in Knightdale, and I can imagine people, you know, screaming and, you know, we're going to call the police because you're violating the law. You know what I mean? I don't know that a criminal penalty needs to be attached, because I really don't know how many.
I agree with you. Again, I appreciate the sentiment. We should hold people accountable for violating these laws.
Yeah.
I don't think that bill is the right way to do it.
Yeah. Well, how about changing the subject to something a lot more pleasant? How about the budget? Do we have any?
I love talking about public records. What are you talking about? and certainly a lot more than I like talking about the budget.
Well, I know that, and I know we have a limited amount of time, so I needed to steer the conversation to something that a little less exciting for you. But any idea when Governor Cooper will roll out his many numbers and appropriations?
You know, that's a good question. I imagine it will be sooner rather than later, because right now the only budget that is lingering from the governor's office is the one that McCrory submitted before he left, which I'm sure Cooper is not going to use. I think we're kind of waiting on that. I think that we're slowly seeing the budget process get off the ground in the General Assembly, and, you know, preliminary conversations going on about that kind of stuff. And so I think, you know, it should be sooner rather than later, but I'm surprised we haven't heard about that yet.
Yeah, I am too. And what's interesting is I finally got somebody to agree with me the other day. It was Representative Bill Brawley. Because I've been saying that I think politically that this is an opportunity for Governor Cooper to really make a political statement with his budget. You know, you roll out this budget that has enormous, you know, I'll make up a number, 15% state employee and teacher pay raises. And all this money that he knows good and well is not going to get through the General Assembly. And when they, you know, don't pass that, then he can, you know, run ads and make political hay by saying, I need Democrats in the General Assembly so we can pay our teachers what they were, you know, stuff like that. And nobody has really bitten on that argument, except Representative Brawley Monday said, yeah, Mark, I agree. I think that's probably what will happen. So who knows?
But that's not really all that different than what McCrory did.
Yeah, well.
I'm not sure how much weight his budget proposals ever got, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's probably why we haven't heard Cooper's budget yet, because they're taking their time and doing the math and crunching the numbers. And I think we are going to see bold policy. I think this will be the first big statement from Roy Cooper of, this is what my priorities are. This is how we want to tackle these priorities. And I will be interested to see how this comes out. You know, Cooper has said we want to raise teacher pay. Phil Berger has said we want to raise teacher pay. And I'm interested, of course, the Senate has said to $55,000 average. I don't know that Cooper has been as specific. So it will be interesting to see, you know, how they square their two proposals, even though they're functionally, you know, the same thing in principle.
Yeah. Well, my question, and maybe you can answer this, is what is Governor Cooper actually doing these days? Because other than making a couple of press conference announcements about House Bill 2, the only thing I see on his social media is, well, I'm having a good time at the Hurricanes game. I'm having a good time at the Wolfpack game. Just seems to be going to a lot of games and not doing a whole lot of anything else. Maybe you can...
Well, let's remember that the governor of North Carolina really doesn't have a whole lot that he has to do anyway. I mean, really and truly. Like, we have one of the weakest governors in the country. So to some extent, his job's really just to be the cheerleader. That being said, I still think that there is a lot going on in the Cooper administration getting with the transition. Of course, we know their transition was delayed by the doubt of, regarding the election and kind of the time it took to certify the results and what have you. And, you know, he still has a couple outstanding cabinet secretaries to appoint. So they're doing that process. And there's a lot to do to get settled in and get people installed at your agencies. And I think they're spending a lot of time focusing on doing that. And so I'm not surprised yet that he hasn't been doing a lot. I think if we get to May or June and he's still not doing a lot, well, okay. But, you know, I think right now they're still kind of in the weeds just trying to figure out which way's up. And that's not a bad thing. I would hope, you know, that's the case.
Well, that'll be baseball season, so he can get outside and work on his tan and enjoy it.
Hopefully he's not going to any state basketball games. He'll be sorely disappointed.
Yeah, that was rough last night. Well, Nick Oxner, always a pleasure. You do a great work at WBTV, and thank you as always for being our guest on What Matters in North Carolina. Always fun to talk to Nick, and I'm with him. We should have a state fried chicken festival. Do you agree? Oh, some of the bills that get filed are certainly interesting, to say the least. Well, I hope you enjoyed our program. Many thanks to Representative Larry Pittman. Came on the show to talk about his bill that would make carrying a concealed firearm something that North Carolina recognizes as a right under the Second Amendment. And also our good friend Nick Oxner from WBTV getting caught up on what's going on around the General Assembly. And, I'm serious. I asked Nick, I understand, North Carolina, the governor doesn't do a whole lot, but Governor McCrory sure seemed a lot busier in his first couple of months. I don't see Governor Cooper doing a whole lot other than I saw a picture of him holding a cat on Facebook, and it seems like every other night he's at some sporting event. So I guess it's good to be governor. It's a good gig if you can get it, is what they say. Anyway, thank you so much for listening. I feel like I have a good gig because I get to bring you the very best content when it comes to state government and policy and politics and things that matter in North Carolina, and it's a real pleasure to do so. Until next time, thank you so much for listening to What Matters in North Carolina.